So, he's a New York Times best-selling author. The Wall Street Journal calls him a top influencer on the web. Forbes says he's one of the top 10 marketeers, and Entrepreneur Magazine says he created one of the 100 most brilliant companies.
That, I was at an event the other day. Someone rolls up in a Ferrari and the other person rolls up in a Bugatti. I rolled up in a Honda Odyssey. Whoop-de-doo. It's a minivan. It works. So the accolades are quite useless. The subscriber count on YouTube does not matter. If you look at a lot of people who have way less, they'll get 10 times more views. Subscriber count is irrelevant.
Look, how do we create content that's not only going to stand out, but is also going to remain relevant over time?
Does the quality of video editing really affect social media views? So we looked at 102,394 reels on Instagram to find the answer.
Oh, what's the one marketing book every professional should read?
None. I don't think I've achieved much. I think I have a long way to go. Sure, compared to the average person, I've accomplished a lot, but people have a lot of potential.
Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. Today, we've got a very special guest, and I'll be honest, when I look at these accolades, they do make me a little bit nervous. So, he's a New York Times best-selling author. The Wall Street Journal calls him a top influencer on the web. Forbes says he's one of the top 10 marketeers, and Entrepreneur Magazine says he created one of the 100 most brilliant companies. He's recognized as a top 100 entrepreneur under the age of 30 by President Obama, and a top 100 entrepreneur under the age of 35 by the United Nations. He's the number one source of all things marketing. It's Neil Patel. Neil, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing good. We're doing good. All the better for speaking to you. So we always start these podcasts off the same way. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
Sure. My name is Neil Patel. I'm a digital marketer and I help people get more traffic to their websites and that traffic converts into sales.
Perfect. And typically, if it might sound like an obvious question, but if I'm someone who's struggling with that, what are the symptoms of me having that problem? Typically, how do I notice it exists?
You have a website and you're not generating the amount of revenue that you want from your site. So, typically, if you have a business or you work at a company, you're like, man, we're just not getting enough sales or leads or customers. That's typically the problem, and we help solve that.
Okay. And for you, what's the number one thing when you're looking at someone's website or someone's reached out to you? What's the number one thing that you think, why on earth did you think that was a good idea? But it comes up time and time again.
I don't really have one of those. When people reach out to us, there's many different reasons, and they all just want more traffic and sales. We've seen businesses all over the country, all over the world, in many different industries. And more so when I look at these businesses, I see different people's perspective on life and the corporate world. And it's helped me learn a lot and become a better entrepreneur over the years because so many people do things differently. My way isn't always the correct way, and it's not the only way either. There's many ways to skin a cat, as they say, and you can learn a lot by just analyzing tons of companies. And I would say by owning an ad agency, because I've looked at so many companies in different industries and so much data, it's just taught me a lot about business.
Neil, your journey in digital marketing, it's been nothing short of incredible. So can you take us back to the early days? So can you share maybe some pivotal moments that have set you on this path to becoming the marketeer that you are today?
Sure. So I'm 38 now. To give you context, I started when I was close to 16, roughly 15 and a half. And I was trying to find a job online, a high-paying job, a six-figure job. Being in high school, that's not quite easy. Most of them required a college degree. The really good ones required certifications. I didn't have either of those. So what I ended up doing was I ended up, going through those job websites, not finding any jobs. And what I quickly learned was those job websites, some of them were publicly traded, one particularly monster.com back in the day. I was like, well, these sites make hundreds of millions of dollars. Let me build a job website, make 1% of what they make, and I'm going to be rich. Created a job website, popped it up. No one came to it, and I was not rich. First off, I created it for the wrong reason. I should have created a business because I could solve a problem. Instead, I created a business because I wanted to make money. Second is, just because you put it out there, it does not mean people will come, right? You know, feel the dreams, build it, and they will come. That is very inaccurate in the world of marketing. You gotta actually spend money, do advertising, spend money on ads, social media marketing, although back then that wasn't really a hot topic because social media wasn't really what you see it is today. And I don't know when MySpace first came about, but either way, it may have not even really existed back then. And then on top of that, the other thing that, you know, you had to do SEO, you had to do email marketing, you had to do all these other things, and I learned it. And I got good at it enough where I was able to get traffic to my own website, but I still was not able to monetize. So eventually I shifted saying, hey, I suck at this entrepreneurship thing, and I'm going to go work for people in marketing because I really love it. And funny enough, I still ended up being an entrepreneur. But what ended up happening is someone hired me as a contractor to help them with their marketing, did really well, drove them roughly extra $20 to $25 million in revenue. It was a team effort though, so it wasn't all me. And then they referred me more customers, and that's how I got started.
Okay. And obviously Zach read out all those accolades in the beginning, and you've done some incredible things, and you've been noticed for your work. So you're at a point where I'm sure if we spoke with 16-year-old Neil, you probably ticked a lot of the boxes. So what is it that drives you forward now in the world of marketing? What are you hoping to achieve, and what boxes are you hoping to tick as you move through the rest of your career?
So the accolades are quite useless, all right? And I don't mean that in an ungrateful way. I'm really appreciative to get the awards. Never met Obama. The United Nations, you know, they mailed it to me. But the point I'm trying to make is accolades don't mean much. You know, there's a lot of people who have done some incredible stuff, like Elon Musk. Has tons of accolades. No one really cares what accolades he's done. Everyone knows who he is. But more particularly, he's well known because of what he has done and what he's accomplished. And I don't really see accolades as that important. Think of that as recognition. Recognition can feed the ego. But what really matters is, do you have a feeling of accomplishment? Do you love what you're doing? Are you content in life? I wouldn't say happy in life, but content. Because happiness is something that you can't maintain 100% of the time, right? But are you just satisfied with where you are in life? And for me, what drives me is the goal of becoming bigger and bigger. I'm not that successful in my space. If you look at what we do, sure, we have a 9-figure company. That's great and all. But some of our competitors, yeah, maybe they've been around for over 100 plus years, but some of them generate 15, 17, 10 billion in revenue, right? These are massive numbers. I'm nowhere near that. Can I grow to 500 million over time, a billion? Sure, but it'll take time. So for me, it's, you know, just fighting the fight and trying to win. And I love winning, and I don't know why. And it's not to win so I can be like, yeah, I'm on the Forbes list or someone knows I'm successful. Like, I don't care for any of that. You know, I was at an event the other day. Someone rolls up in a Ferrari and the other person rolls up in a Bugatti. I rolled up in a Honda Odyssey. Whoop-dee-doo. It's a minivan. It works. You know, not expensive. Could I buy a Bugatti? Sure. Don't care for one, right? Like, I don't care what people think about me. I just personally have to win, and I don't know why, but I keep pushing forward because my competitors, it doesn't matter if they've been around for 100 plus years, them just being bigger than me pushes me to continually want to win and do better.
Have you always been that way, or is this an evolution, the outlook you've got now?
Definitely an evolution. When I was a little kid, I wanted a Maserati, the one I saw in Entourage, the TV show back in the day. Then I ended up, never cared for a Ferrari or anything like that, never bought the Maserati. Then I wanted fancy watches and clothes. Eventually I bought some fancy watches and clothes. But it was an evolution. I think what's changed my life is building a business that gets to enough revenue. And then also the other thing that's really changed for me is having kids and, you know, getting married, and you realize some things are much more important than others, and what you thought was important may have not been. You know, just being healthy, having kids, and everyone being happy and one good family unit, like, very important thing. Seeing your kids do plays or learn new things, a lot of times it's more important than making another dollar.
Yeah, 100%. So when I reached out to you, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was, we really want to give kind of actionable takeaways to people who listen to this podcast. And if you go on LinkedIn and you type in marketing as a topic, there's lots and lots of different quote unquote experts with all conflicting advice on what to do when it comes to marketing. So if I'm a business owner and I'm looking to turn on that marketing tap for the first time, and I'm petrified to do so because of all these conflicting views and opinions, underneath all the weeds and the noise, what are the things I need to be thinking about or considering to give me results, or at least start to think about getting results?
It depends what channel that you're trying to go after. For SEO, you got to manually create a lot of content. We're seeing that human-written content is outranking AI content more than 94% of the time when we ran tests. The traffic difference from AI-written content versus human-written content is drastic too. You know, you got to make sure your website loads fast. You got to button up a lot of different factors. We have an SEO analyzer that people can go check on neilpatel.com/SEO-analyzer. And they can just put in their URL and I'll tell them all the factors to fix for free. That's for SEO. For social media marketing, most platforms, and I just wrote a blog post about this literally last night. Most platforms right now, when we looked at over 6 million pieces of content over the last 30 days, so recent data, right? Because what worked for social media early 2023, that doesn't matter. Algorithms change over time. We want to know what was working now. In the last 30 days, the number one most popular piece of content on social is short-form videos. The second most popular piece of content is long-form videos. The third most popular piece of content is interviews, podcasts, or expert talks. Right, that would be the third bucket. And when you look at those, if you just created more long form videos, I know short form videos was the number one producer, but look at just for a moment, just, you know, play along with me. If you create long form videos, even like this, whether it's a podcast interview or expert interview, whatever you want to call it, you can slice and dice and then end up getting clips and turning them into short form videos. You can kill two birds with one stone, in essence. So what I would do with social media is I would first post on X, all right? Think of word vomit. Just post all your thoughts on there on a daily basis as many times as you want. You'll figure out the stuff that hits and you'll figure out the stuff that doesn't. Majority won't. Take the stuff that hits and then only the stuff that hits, and then create video content based off of that, whether short form or long form, and you can read it word for word, which is what I do. And then publish that on LinkedIn. Publish that on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube. And now you have content for all the social platforms that should gain traction, and you're much more likely to hit, and people are going to see your brand and much more likely to buy your product.
So you're one of the fortunate people. We don't get to speak to people every day who've got over 1 million subscribers on YouTube. In terms of the video,
doesn't matter though.
Go on.
The subscriber count on YouTube does not matter. If you look at a lot of people who have way less, they'll get 10 times more views. Subscriber count is irrelevant.
Okay. So go on, educate me a bit more then in terms of the, what are the metrics to look at?
So there's a few different metrics, and funny enough, we created a tweet about this the other day, and I'm going to pull it up so I can actually share the stats with you, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'll read it. This is quite interesting. So, here was the post. Does the quality of video editing really affect social media views? So we looked at 102,394 reels on Instagram to find the answer. We also surveyed 1,681 people to find out the answer as well. So when we surveyed people, right, 1,228 out of the 1,600 and change said that they care about the video quality. And then we asked them, do you care if the quality sucks but the content's good, would you keep watching? In essence, more than half said no, so 921 said no. Now let's look at the actual data. So we looked at 102,394 reels to see what's actually getting the traffic. When we looked at which videos get the most views, 24.4% were videos that had visual design elements, like people putting animations and fly-throughs to the video. The 75.6 did not have any of that, and they generated the majority of the views. So from the reels that we analyzed, we started to look at what elements, we took the top 10% of the videos that got the most traffic. We looked at over 20 factors, but there was around 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There was 8 factors that had a lot of commonality, okay? So I'm gonna end up breaking them down. And this is for YouTube and all, it's very similar. So 41.5% of the top performing videos had captions. Keep in mind, a lot of people don't have audio when they're listening, watching these videos, even on YouTube. Number 2 was a hook, 37.9%. You gotta hook them in. If you don't hook them in, humans have a shorter attention span than goldfish. Literally, no joke, it's by roughly a second. If you can't hook them in, you're not gonna keep them going, okay? The third one was entertainment. Humor, you know, like silly, people playing pranks, that kind of stuff. That was 26.1. Emotional component was 24.8%. You know, like videos that make you feel sad, happy, they like convey a specific type of emotion. Like sometimes people have those like sad, you know, Instagram reels. And then storytelling was 13.6, background music 9.7, trending topic 8.6, newsworthy 6.1%. So it just shows the type of stuff that makes videos popular, whether it's on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. It's all very similar. The algorithms, you know, may have some tweaks here or there, but they typically like the same stuff.
So if, I guess, leaning into that, you're the expert here, so let's pick your brains. For anybody that's listening and they're starting video content and they're thinking, I want to post reels and YouTube shorts and I want to gain traction, I don't know what a hook is, I don't know what's good, I don't know what's going to grasp their attention, what should they do?
So what they should do is just go on YouTube and look at competitor videos, competitor channels, or Instagram, any competitor accounts, and see which of their competitor videos got a lot of views and dissect them. What did they say at the very beginning that made people intrigued to continually watch the rest? That's a hook. What did they do throughout the video to keep your attention? How long was the video? Did they use images? What else did they do that's special and unique compared to the videos that they released that didn't get much traffic at all or many views at all?
Okay. So
no one has to be an expert to do this. The people who are better at this than even I am are the young kids who grew up on these devices.
And they just know naturally where to lead to. So, Neil, the three buckets you spoke about, all like the webinars, the expert talks, podcast, short form, all of that falls into mainly video content. But obviously, you're well known for your blog, and your blog is a go-to.
It was all video. When I looked at factors, where was it? I have one on text too. So when I looked at, where is it, quality of the videos, I recently posted about this. Here's the data. So I had a post on the kind of content that will perform the best in social media in 2024. And we talked about the interviews and all that kind of stuff. There was one other bucket, other, okay? The other type of content was at 6.47%. Keep in mind, not all social networks take text, but text was in that bucket. Out of the text-based content, when we just looked at the text-based content, the types that got the most engagement, how-to type of posts, 38.53%, listicles, 32.71%, then it drops down, current events, 7.49%. If you're going to create text-based content, people want listicles and how-tos, even though people think they're old and outdated. That's still what does well. And if you don't have time to create content, you can always use user-generated content, which was 10.12% of the engagement. And user-generated content performs the best on Instagram, then YouTube, then TikTok, and then there's a steep drop-off to Facebook, then LinkedIn, and X, there's a massive drop-off for user-generated content.
So let's dig deeper into that, because obviously you've got a blog, you use a lot of written text. So with attention spans being like a goldfish, I agree with you on that one. So how, I know you said lists and stuff like that, but how do we really, especially when we're thinking about a blog, how do we create content that's not only going to stand out, but is also going to remain relevant over time?
Well, I like taking the stuff that hits from X, which I talked about earlier, use it as your word vomit place where you're just brainstorming, putting out a lot of stuff. The stuff that hits, you can turn it into a blog post, which is what I do. And the way you keep it relevant is we update our content multiple times a year. Try to update your content once a quarter. If you look at the top performing websites, they don't spend their time just creating content. They spend actually the majority of their time updating content. Prime example of this is Wikipedia. Do any search on Google in any language, any country, chances are you see Wikipedia on page one, right? Not always, but there's a high probability. Why? Wikipedia doesn't focus on creating new content. It focuses on continually making their existing content better and better and better. That's the key.
So, Neil, I heard someone the other day describing SEO as a dark art, right? I don't necessarily agree, but they were describing SEO as a dark art and saying it's very hard to see predictable ROI from any investment in it. So in terms of your experience and looking at SEO today, what would you back as a 3-year, 5-year strategy if you were looking at SEO as something that's going to give those predictable results in perhaps a world of dark arts?
Sure. So I wouldn't say SEO is really a dark art. I think what they mean is SEO is very unpredictable. It's harder to put, you know, your finger on and figure out how to make it work. When you look at SEO in general, when we look at all marketing channels, it tends to win in ROI when you fast forward 3+ years. We've seen it outbeat paid advertising, social media marketing, the list goes on and on. It literally has the highest ROI from any other channel that we've seen. The problem with SEO is it takes 2 to 3 years to see really good results. You have to be consistent. It doesn't mean in year one or even within the first 3 or 6 months you can't see results. You just probably won't be happy with the results. It takes a long time and many years to keep plugging away to do really well with SEO. That's where people break. They're not consistent and they can't just maintain the quality for that many years. But if they did, the results are amazing. You know, we've grown at one point on the Inc. 5000 list. We were the 21st fastest growing company in the United States just because of the traffic we were getting from SEO. Now, it was hard to maintain that ranking spot because as you get larger and larger, it's a law of large numbers, you can't keep growing at the same pace. But there's no reason we can't grow, you know, 30, 40% a year. It's really hard for us to grow 100%, 200% a year at our size and scale.
So is the issue typically then that people aren't aware of the expectation, they've not managed the expectation properly, so they're underestimating what can be done short term and then just giving up?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, okay.
They just don't have realistic expectations and they're not willing to continue to make the investment for a while. If they did both those things, they'll be better.
Okay. And then from your experience, obviously, I'm guessing a lot of this stuff you practiced on yourself first, and that's why you've been so well known and sought after. But what issues does it present in terms of if it goes really well and you scale incredibly in that 3 years, what are some of the challenges you had to overcome?
So you're saying what challenges you have to overcome is you got to create a lot of amazing content that people haven't talked about before because no one wants to read regurgitated information. 2, you got to keep updating your content. 3, you got to make your website user experience amazing because that impacts SEO. 4, you got to have your website load time fast. 5, you got to get people to link to your website. Links are like votes. A president wins, we're going into a presidential election in the United States, but a president wins based on who gets the most votes. I know it's not that black and white, but it's close enough, right? It's winner take all, each state. But nonetheless, you know, in theory, it's just whoever gets the most votes, typically, sorry about that, my kids woke me up in the middle of the night. But what ends up happening is, you know, with the internet, if you can get more people to link to you, the higher off you're going to end up ranking. So you got to do all those things. You got to do it consistently for many years. And there's probably another like 100 to 200 other factors that you got to take into account as well. Like when someone searches, is your title tag appealing? Do they want to click on your search result? That impacts your rankings. Like there's a lot of little things like that that really impact how well you're going to do on Google.
Neil, there's going to be people listening to this podcast who are aspiring marketeers, aspiring entrepreneurs. Imagine we'll go back 22 years. I don't know if I did the maths well. And there's going to be a mini Neil listening to this podcast, hoping that they can become the next Neil Patel one day. What kind of advice would you give? What is the single most valuable piece of advice that you would give someone starting their journey in digital marketing today?
Yeah, so the first advice I would say is aim higher than being Neil Patel. You can do way better than me. There's way more people who have done way more from when you look at what impact they're going to make on humanity or even from a financial aspect, they've done way better than me. So I would say aim higher because you can do better than me for sure. I'm not a high bar to set. The second thing is be passionate about whatever you're doing. I love marketing. That keeps pushing me forward. Elon Musk loves doing crazy stuff like putting, you know, stuff into space and solving hard, complex problems. So he keeps pushing and working, you know, 100-hour weeks or whatever the crazy number is. You got to figure out where you're passionate about and double down on that, because then you'll put in the time and energy required to succeed. The third thing is do it for a long time. Elon Musk wasn't born overnight, nor was Bill Gates. They weren't just zero to heroes right away. It takes many, many years of just consistency and grinding it out to do well, and most people aren't willing to put in the energy.
Okay. And I guess, Neil, tell me if this is unfair, but throughout the conversation, there's been moments of like comparison. Like you've obviously, you've achieved a lot and you've done some incredible things. Would you say you're at a point where you feel quite content and happy with the things that you've achieved, or is there so much more to do until you feel like you've achieved it?
I don't think I've achieved much. I think I have a long way to go, but I'm content in life. If I never made another dollar, I couldn't work another day because something happened. I hope, you know, I stay healthy for a long time. I just knocked on wood, a little superstitious. You know, I would be okay, but I would prefer to accomplish a lot more. And not accomplish it where I can create an article being like, look what I did here. I don't care about anyone. It's just my own goals and just reaching them. And I hope everyone listening can accomplish what they dream of. And if they push hard, they can. And like I said, they can do way more than I've done. You know, I'm nothing special. Elon Musk or one of those guys is something special. That's not me. And I'm not trying to belittle myself or trying to be, you know, Debbie Downer either. Sure, compared to the average person, I've accomplished a lot, but people have a lot of potential. They just got to believe in themselves. And I really do believe people can do much better than me. Do I think it's easy to do what Elon Musk did? No, but somewhere in between is where people can land.
Okay. So you sound like you've got a killer mindset. So if we take the marketing off the table and we look at your entrepreneurial journey, what have been the biggest challenges when it comes to running and growing a business, aside from the marketing aspects?
So forget bigger challenges. I'm going to end up breaking down three big things that I've learned. And if I learned them earlier, I would have gone much further. So the first was focus. I tried doing too many things in my career early on at once, instead of just focusing on one thing at a time and just doubling down until growth slows down and then expanding. The second thing is, you know, early on in my career, I picked small TAMs. TAM stands for total addressable market. It's easier to make 1% of a $1 trillion market than it is to make, you know, 100% of a $100 million market. Go for really big markets because it's easier to capture a fraction of a percent. The third thing is, you won't know everything. That's okay. But you can hire for it. Look for people who have worked for your competitors, who have gotten promoted multiple times, because everyone says that they were the reason the competition did really well. But if they got promoted multiple times, that means the competitor felt that that person was valuable. And then you take that person and you put them in your organization and have them solve the same problems that they solved for the competitor. You'll grow faster.
I love this. It's been really actionable in terms of takeaways. I've just got a few rapid fire questions to ask you, Neil, just before we wrap up. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course that's okay. Thank you guys for your time today.
No, our pleasure. So what's the one marketing book every professional should read?
None. Instead, None. You should continually read online because marketing is changing so fast with algorithms and platforms. A lot of the books are outdated. Doesn't mean the books aren't great. You know, Seth Godin's written amazing marketing books. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't read them. I'm just saying you're going to get the most valuable insights from reading what's changing on a regular basis because marketing is evolving so fast.
Great advice. And what's your favorite marketing campaign that you've worked on?
If I had to pick one, I was about to say I don't think I have one. But if I had to pick one, it was probably my own marketing campaign and for ourselves. And it was disrupting the market by giving away free software tools when people are charging $100 a month for some of them. And that's really helped us grow super fast from a brand perspective, a lead perspective, etc.
What's the most underrated marketing strategy?
The most underrated marketing strategy is giving away stuff for free and then upselling on the back end. I'll give you a prime example for this. You know, Gillette doesn't make money off the razors. They make money off the razor blades. People keep buying the same ones over and over again to plug them into their razors so they can keep shaving. Well, if you can give away some of those things for free and Gillette tested it out, you can make a lot of money just reselling razors. Now, I'm not saying that people should, you know, to switch topics here, but and this is another example. I'm not saying people should be for guns or against guns, but I was once in a meeting with Remington, a gun manufacturer, and they were breaking down how they make a lot of money. And I noticed a lot of their money comes from ammunition. And I said, you have all these guns sitting in a warehouse and they're getting old. Have you thought about just giving them away for free and people just have to buy ammo in exchange? They're like, no. And I was like, well, you make all your money and your profit from ammo, so why don't you just give away the guns for free and make the money on the ammo? Like, oh, we can't do that. I'm like, yeah, you can. They're sitting there anyways, and you're not making money from it. You should just consider giving them away and making money from the ammo. And again, I'm not saying I'm for guns or against guns, but I was just saying it's an underrated marketing strategy that many people ignore. And for the record, I don't own any guns or anything like that.
It's funny to hear that. As two Englishmen sat in rainy England, it sounds like a conversation we'd never be in. You should give your guns away. Okay, and then the last one, obviously you've always had the entrepreneurial bug from, you know, 15, 16, like you were saying before. Let's say marketing had never been an option, the robots had taken it over or something. What do you think the other path would have been that you would have taken?
Well, I would have got into finance, private equity or hedge funds or iBanking or one of those spaces, but I definitely would have got into finance.
Beautiful. A lot of wisdom there, Neil. And if anyone's listening to this and they want to start looking at your content or maybe make an inquiry to get some help from you, where would they start that process? Where would be best?
My ad agency is called NP Digital. My initials, Neil Patel Digital. And my website, neilpatel.com. My social handles are Neil Patel.
Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.